Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
The hourly updates on Radio Le Mans, brought to you by Audi Ultra, lightweight technology.
Just over 2.5 hours of the race gone. 5:30 on Saturday afternoon here at Le Mans. 40 laps are now in the book, and the race leader is in the pits on a routine pit stop. This is the number 17 Porsche, the red car. Timo Bernhardt has just brought that car in, and I suspect we'll be getting a new set of tyres and a new driver getting into that car. So the positions are in a state of flux at the moment. In second place is the number 7 Audi, Andre Lotterer, on his fourth stint on his current set of tyres, about to take the lead again as a result of the Porsche being in the pits. In third place, on his out lap, having just made a pit stop and got a new set of tyres, now Mark Lieb at the wheel of the number 18 Porsche. And then behind him is the number 9 Audi in the hands of Marco Bonanomi. And again, all of the Audi drivers have been in the car since the start of the race, the Porsche drivers all having changed since the start. Fifth place is Loic Duval in the number 8 Audi. He's 3.6 seconds behind the number 9 car. And then in sixth place is the number 19 Porsche, which Nick Tandy is driving. He is 4.7 seconds behind the Audi number 8 ahead of him. In seventh place, having just made a pit stop, Anthony Davidson now at the wheel of Toyota number 1, 20 seconds ahead of the number 2 Toyota, which is 8th, Stefan Sarrazin, having just taken over the wheel of that one. In ninth place is the number 12 Rebellion. Matthias Besch is now a lap behind the Toyotas in car number 12. And then in 10th place is the leading LMP2 car, number 47, the KCMG Orica 05 with its Nissan engine. Nicolas Lapierre now at the wheel of that car. He's 3 laps behind the race leader, but is leading his class by over half a minute, over 30 seconds, separating Nicolas Lapierre in the 47 KCMG LMP2 car from number 46, a Thierry by TDS Racing Orica 05, which is currently in the hands of Ludovic Bardi. As I say, 30 seconds behind the class leader. Third in LMP2 is car number 41 for Greaves Motorsport. This is the Kairos-sponsored Gibson with the Nissan engine. And that car now has John Lancaster behind the wheel and is just 8 seconds behind the Thierry by TDS car. So 47, 46 and 41 are your top three in LMP2. In GTE Pro, it's Aston Martin's first and second. Number 95, Nicky Thiem, leads the way, 5 seconds ahead of the number 99, Richie Stanaway-driven Aston Martin. And then third in GTE Pro is the number 51 AF Corsa Ferrari, a further 6 seconds behind the two Aston Martins. In GTE AM, the leading car there is the number 53, the Viper, which has a 5 second lead over the 72 Ferrari, Victor Scheitar, at the wheel of the SMP racing car. And then in third place in GTE AM is car number 98, which is Paul Dallalana at the wheel of the AM Aston Martin. He is 6 seconds from the class leader, but right on the tail of the Ferrari 458 of Victor Scheitar. That's the update. It's 5:30 in the afternoon.
The hourly updates on Radio Le Mans, brought to you by Audi Ultra, lightweight technology.
And after that update, well, Paul Truswell mentioned actually the battle that's taking place between SMP Racing and the Aston Martin crew of the 98, and we were smiling at that a short time ago as well, Johnny Merlin and myself.
It was fantastic, and I think although, as we just heard there, that the Viper is leading the Pro-Am class, I'm pretty sure that your own Blake Mullen is actually out of sequence there on pit stop. So effectively that fight between the 72 Ferrari, SMP Ferrari, and the 98 Aston Martin of Paul Dallalana, that's actually for the Pro-Am lead.
The other thing that, of course, KCMG will be rather happy about is, okay, they pull Richard Bradley out after an awesome stint. And who do they hand over to? But a man who used to race for Toyota, former TSO40 driver, of course, no longer with that team. But the KCMG car have signed him up, platinum driver, and all of a sudden he's putting great times in for the 47 car, leading its class by over half a minute now, Johnny.
Yes, absolutely. And Nicolas Lapierre, in my opinion, about 3 years ago in the Toyota, was one of the stars of this race. So fantastic to actually find him back in a car where he's actually got a chance of maybe going for a class victory.
Send down to Joe Bradley, who's just seen a stop for the number 7 Audi. That feels like it's very soon after another stop for the 7 Audi, Joe Bradley. There's a driver change there, though, as well.
I think so. And it was kind of my thoughts. Well, I'm sure I just described the number 7 Audi just coming in for fuel. And then it's back on pit road. And Andre Lotter is getting out of the car. He's out of the car. Benoit Trullier is into the car. It took on hardly any fuel. Paul will be able to tell us if that's the case. So maybe a bit of cramp for Lotterer. I'll find out. I'll grab a word with Andre when we get the chance. But Paul, is that its second stop?
Yes, it is. It was a three-lap stint from Andre. And the one flying lap in between the outlap and the in-lap was a 3 minutes 35. And so I just wonder whether either the car had a puncture or tyre wear suddenly became an issue. My guess would be a puncture, and of course there's no point in bringing Andre in and just replacing the errant wheel and sending him on his way again, because then he'd go over his 4 hour limit if he would carry on. So it makes sense at this stage to have the change, and I'm sure we'll see the driver change, Ben Trelawney, back on his way again. The pit stop was a minute and 3 seconds, which is kind of a tyre change, plus, as you said, Joe, just a little bit of refuelling, but something a little bit off schedule, and the first perhaps glint of a gap in the armour.
Joe's got an answer for you, and possibly even a word with Lotterer, but puncture, Joe?
Yeah, it is puncture from the team. Disappointing, I would imagine. Andre Lotterer is now... Just a quick more. You must be really disappointed. The team were geared up for that fuel stop, Andre, and those guys look like athletes, but now out of sequence with that puncture.
Yeah, it's a shame. It was going really well. Was pushing hard. The car was going well, and then the puncture immediately after the pit stop. Yeah, disappointing, but that's part of Le Mans. Lost some time, obviously, but we have a good car, so we can fight back.
Fight back indeed. Thank you, Andre Lotterer.
Good work, Joe, down in the Nismo pit lane there to get Andre as soon as he got out of the car. That's just one of the things, Johnny Mullin, that you've got to work around, and the schedule is forever changing, isn't it, for people like Lena Gade looking after that car.
Absolutely, and then Paul hit the nail on the head earlier when he said maybe we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves in our excitement in terms of maybe he's only 3 hours in saying what's going to happen. And it's exactly right, you can grab a puncture anywhere at any time around this track, and it can really sort of throw the cat amongst the pigeons. But I think we know that, like he says, they're up for the fight back. Those three drivers in Benoit, Andre, and obviously with Marcel Fassler as well, then those guys know how to win this race. They won't be getting unduly worried at this stage.
So, busy down into the Ford chicane here for the car now driven by Nick Tandy, the number 19 machine.
I love these in-car shots, don't you? I mean, absolutely fantastic. Some really good television pictures that we're able to see at the moment on the screen. Absolutely beautiful as they cut through the Ferrari and the GTM class there.
Our job, of course, to describe them to you if you're not here at the track. If indeed you are, of course, we're here once again on 91.2 FM Mobile One Radio Le Mans, and thoroughly enjoying this the first few hours of the 83rd running at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. In a very short time, there'll just be 21 hours to go. We're whipping through this mid-afternoon to early evening period.
Absolutely, and for those of you that aren't fortunate enough to actually be here, or maybe you are here, I mean, get out to the trackside and have a look at these Porsches as they come off the corners. I've never seen anything like it. The acceleration of these LMP1 Porsches in particular, and all the LMP1 cars, is absolutely incredible, especially coming out of some areas like the Dunlop Chicane or out onto the little pit straight. So if you're here, go down and have a look, and if you're not, come here at some point and have a look.
Lapierre still going really quickly in the 47 Orica from KCMG, so he has pulled away by a decent margin now from Ludovic Badé, who's the silver driver in the Thierrier squad. Two Oricas leading the way for P2 from John Lancaster now in the 41 Greaves Gibson. That won, of course, the opening round of the European Le Mans Series at Silverstone, did the 41 car. Kevin Estre going strongly in the number 34 machine. Kevin Estre and Laurens Vanthoor have stepped up from GT3 cars to a prototype. Tell us what sort of a step that is. You know, massively more downforce in one of these cars.
Well, their backgrounds, well, not so much in Kev Estre. He does have a GT background, but Vantur also has some downforce experience from single seaters. And in actual fact, it's easier stepping up, coming up from a GT car to an LMP2 or even an LMP1 car is actually in some ways easier in terms of the driving. Obviously, you've just got to sometimes have that sort of faith that the car will stick and use that downforce. But in a lot of ways, it's a lot easier to make the step up than it is for an LMP driver to come down and drive a GT car, because there's a real black art to GT cars, whereas prototypes are a little bit more like your standard race car and they respond accordingly. Having said all of that, as we were just mentioning about the speeds that these cars now, the LMP1 cars in particular, are taking through places like the Porsche curves, sometimes that is mind-blowing. And speaking to some of the drivers earlier on in those cars, it really is a case of having faith that this car will stick through the corners. But they feel pretty solid, and when you're into the aero and it's really pushing the car down into the track, it gives you confidence to drive and push the car. Whereas in a GT car, it never really feels completely glued. It's always moving around and sliding a little bit.
Now, I've spoken to both Nick Tandy and Sam Bird, who've made a similar jump from the GT, the kind of the grand touring cars, to a purebred prototype car. I said, is it not disconcerting as well to have all the scenery thrown at you far quicker than you're used to? And that's the difference between, and that's why I'm not a racing driver. They went, you just drive to the grip of the car. And
that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And Sam Bird, though, absolute stellar, you know, Mercedes Formula 1 driver, GP2. Yeah. So for him, LMP2 is probably feeling a little bit slow. I mean, he really is up there in the LMP1 speeds, wouldn't be too fast for him. Nick Tandy, on the other hand, really does come from a GT background and I've raced against him many years, fantastic GT driver. And for him to make the step up to LMP1 as seamless as he has is a real achievement. He's doing very, very well.
So Tandy is fifth in the third of the Porsches, the white number 19 car. He's behind Marco Bonanomi in the number 9 Audi. Loic Duval, though, is the best of the Audis, the four rings, in car number 8. Loic Duval, third position, and he in turn is behind race leader Brendan Hartley in the 17 car, and Mark Lieb now, who's in the 18 car. So it is still the red machine from the black car, and there's about 15 seconds now between the two of them. This is lap 44.
And the leading Audi now, of course, is the number 8 Loic Duval car. The number 7 Audi, the André Lotterer car, no longer André at the wheel, of course, we just heard from him. Benoit Trelluet at the wheel of it now. He is 17 seconds behind the car ahead of him, which is the 5th place Porsche, and 38 seconds away from the race leader. So that pit stop certainly hasn't lost him the race, but it has had a significant impact, and as I say, it's pushed him down so that he's now facing a bit of an uphill struggle, but certainly not a struggle that is impossible to overcome.
Paul, I'm going to throw a bit of a curveball at you now and see keep you on your toes. The Blecamolen Viper, that's currently number 53 car leading the GT Pro-Am class, when do you think he's due to pit? Because he seems to have been out there leading for a long time now, and I would have thought that he was due into pit very, very soon, but maybe he's legitimately leading that class on pace.
Number 53, as you say, leading the GTE AM class, has done 8 laps on the current stint. What he did in order to get himself into that position was to stay out for a monster 16 laps.
Fuel economy is very good on that car then, obviously. They're really working it.
Assisted by the safety car. So it was whilst the safety car was out, you know, they always have a mapping that they can set whilst the safety car's out. But Blecamolen, as you say, he's been in the car since the start of the race, did a 16 lap stint whilst the safety car was out, and he'll be out, I reckon, for another 6 laps or so. So
they're about half and half then in terms of the cars that are behind, I believe, have probably got about another 10 or 11 laps left to go. So they're sort of a slightly out of sequence, would you say, with the Viper in that class?
They're on exactly the same sequence as the number 72 Ferrari, and the Aston Martin will have to come in early because Pedro Lamy, who started in that car, did a short first stint, presumably just to make a little bit more room for the other Astons when they came into the pits, so there's so many of them.
Some clever race strategy then by the Viper team.
I think it's certainly not going to change as a result of the pit sequence coming out. So yeah, good question. I'm glad I could handle it because systems help. Good.
We had every faith in you, Paul.
There were sparks coming out of his head at that point, but he did handle it, didn't he, Johnny?
Absolutely. Impressive pace here from Ludovic Badet, by the way. He's actually going quicker than Tristan Gommendy did in the number 46 car. Now, when you consider Badet is the silver driver in that lineup, Tristan Gommendy the platinum, but I would assume that Gommendy was in quite a bit of traffic during his stint, and now the 46 car able to stretch its legs a little bit. It's a 40-second lead margin for Nicolas Lapierre.
He's doing, Nicolas Lapierre, we mentioned him earlier, doing another fastest lap after fastest lap, and a 3 minute 39.168 on that last lap from Nicolas Lapierre, and also his best and the car's best middle sector on this lap that we're talking about now. So that car certainly at the moment, and again it's very, very early days, especially in the LMP2 class, but that car looking really strong, the KCMG number 47 Orica.
Keeping an eye on Kevin Esch's progress as well in the 34. He's making quick work of the traffic around him and trying to catch John Lancaster in the 41 car. Pace would show that he could do that, but he has got to find, what's that, over a 20-second margin at the moment. So we'll keep an eye on the number 34 machine. Straight down to our Nismo pit lane, though, have a word with Bruce Jones.
Well, Joe and I have decided for a bit of variety. We've swapped pit lanes. If I'm biased too much, the 98 is coming in. That's looking like a standard pit stop. They can go hurry, hurry, quick, quick. But 96, they've just got as low as they can go. They've taken the whole front left corner off that now. So they just pulled it off as I reached here. Now they can start the reassembly. So don't expect any sudden return for the 96. 98 looks like a nice standard pit stop. I think there was a driver change. I was trying to look at two garages, but a tale of two cars in the same team but running in a very different order at the moment.
Meanwhile, down the Mulsanne straight goes the GTE AM leader, Jeroen Blekemolen. We've already talked about the SRT Viper, which showing good pace, and it seems pretty consistent pace as well for the 53 car, able to stay out in the lead of the race, leading from the 72 SMP Racing Ferrari of Victor Scheitar, then Paul Dallalana, who's just had a stop actually, so rejoining now the number 98 car in third position, stays in third in GTE AM.
Just as Paul predicted.
That's right. We never doubted him, did we?
Now, is this the first time that Brandon Hartley has led Le Mans? I think it might be, isn't it?
Yes, I think it probably is.
In the number 17 yes. Porsche, so a really nice moment for Brendan there, and fantastic job that he's done since joining the full factory LMP1 Porsche team, and couldn't happen to a nicer fella. I'm really proud of him at the moment, doing a super job out front. 13.4 second lead over his teammate in the sister LMP1 18 Porsche, driven at the moment by Mark Lieb.
Sharing that drive, Brendan, with Timo Bernhard, who started the car, and of course Mark Webber, who will get a stint in due course. We're on lap 45. The lead margin is 13.4 seconds back to Mark Lieb.
Always tough, Johnny, when you're the third driver there. Mark Webber will be sitting here watching this all unfold, and when they're doing triple and quadruple stints, you actually feel like the race has gone on, you know, for hours and hours and hours before you actually get a chance to go in and actually contribute yourself.
Probably how John Hindhoff's feeling right now, of course.
Yes, I'm sure
I've been
it
in
is,
the booth
yes.
since the start of the race, loving every minute of it, but we'll be handing over in about 12 minutes time. Now, something has happened towards the end of Mulsanne Strait, just getting the message that although not a slow zone has been put in place, there are double waved yellows close to Mulsanne Corner, so get your news on that as soon as we have it. Meanwhile, the Hanergy-backed Aston Martin is working its way out of the chicane, still in second position, Paul.
A bit further around the track, actually, Johnny. It's down at Indianapolis, sorry, not as far as Arnage. Indianapolis corner is where the waved yellow flags are. What we don't have is any information coming through as to what might be the cause of them. However, what I will do is to just go back a little bit and report from the stewards. That there was the incident that led to the conflagration of the Porsche 92, the Manti car, and also involved the Rebellion and the Stracker, was investigated by the stewards. No further action has been taken. It was a racing incident, they say.
Well, that's a very sensible decision. I don't see how that could possibly be anybody's fault. You have oil pouring onto your left rear tyre and spin, and someone else hits that oil and hits somebody else. I mean, it literally is the sort of thing that can happen to anybody.
An almighty moment for Benoit Treluet coming through the S's there just before Tête Rouge. The rear of the car tapping the Armco. He was all crossed up over the grass, over the curbs, and actually rescued the situation. Big shunt there earlier on today in one of the Aston support races where the guy Chris Brown couldn't get it back and slammed into the Armco to driver's right. Benoit Treluet, superb car control in one of these P1s. He's passed back past the incident scene now. and just nails it, but that could have ended in disaster for the number seven car, many people's favourite.
And there is now a slow zone there at Indianapolis, and indeed it starts just before Indianapolis, inevitably the slow zone going back a little way in order to get the cars into a position where they can go slowly through the slow zone. They have a slowing down zone immediately before that. Drivers being warned of debris on the track in that area, but still no information coming through to us, at least, about which car it is that caused that debris and indeed has triggered the slow zone at Indianapolis.
Front or rear bumper, I'd say, that was in the middle of the track, and a brave marshal did hop down from post and nab it quickly, literally crossed from one side of the road to the other and picked up the bumper. Bruce Jones may have a theory that it's the 43 car, the Team Saab Morand P2, that has lost a bit of its bodywork.
I think it was the rear wing. I think it was the rear wing of the LMP2.
Okay, so Bruce just now making his way towards the 43 car, which is actually in the pits. So it's a car certainly minus rear wing. Is this the moment that we can see for Benoit Trelluet again? No, but it's again a bit of a sideways action, drifting his way through the second chicane, possibly, for the 7 car, which is running in 6th position, Benoit Trelluet.
Oh!
And a big shunt there for the number 8 Audi, which is then collected by the Labra Competition Corvette, so a spin for the 8 car. Now, this was the area that was covered with the slow zone, wasn't it? But the 8 car has nosed into the barrier there. We know these cars are built strong, so as long as the 8 driver, Loic Duval, can get that car back to pit lane, Audi should be able to fix it. Haven't seen the build up to the accident yet, but it's turned left up to Indianapolis. That is a fast section, Johnny Marlon.
Well, I think it's probably as a result of the slow zone, and it is because he's coming in behind and trying to slow down, and you come in so quickly into the slow zones and it is so difficult, because obviously what you want to do is accelerate massively quickly up until you reach the end of your slow zone. And I had it nearly happen to me a couple of times last year. The one downside to these slow zones is you have incredibly big closing speeds, and he was entering the slow zone there, had nothing he could do, couldn't possibly stop, had to take it. So it makes him look incredibly foolish, but in actual fact, that is so easy to have happen to you with the closing speeds of these cars coming into slow zones, because other cars back up and check up more than you're actually expecting them to. And we see a right wheel look like they're actually coming off of one of the Ferraris, I believe.
Yeah, so
is that the 51 or the 71 that we see with the right rear, as we're following Loic Duval coming through the Porsche curves there? But either the 51 or the 71 car of the AF Corsa have lost, look like they've lost a right rear wheel, Paul.
95 in.
It might just have been the carcass of the tyre that rolled away. But yes, I mean, the problem, just to go back to your point about the slow zone, the problem is this yellow flag zone before the slowdown, before the slow zone. It's the slowing down zone where no overtaking is allowed. But of course, you do get the you do still have cars going at different speeds, but no overtaking, and that's
well, that's exactly right. And we were talking about it in the driver's briefing last year. We were saying it's a slowing down zone, so it's a zone where you prepare to reach the point where you cannot speed anymore. But some people use it like a pit lane speed entry, and you literally come up to it in the last possible moment, you brake and bring it down to those speeds, and that's what most of the drivers are doing. But then you're going to have a lot of, as we see the cars stopped in the pits there, and these things are built like tanks, aren't they, Johnny? They'll definitely, as we see, a whole front headlight section. But going back to what you were saying, Paul, that's the problem, because some drivers use the slow zone to sort of go down through the gears as if they've seen the traffic lights stopped, you know, a mile down the road, and other drivers at that point are still flat out, and that is always going to cause problems, as we've seen in this particular instance.
I just have a slight I'm just wondering whether what we saw was actually, and you can probably tell this because you were looking at the screens more than I was, but was the slow zone definitely in place when that incident happened, or what were we seeing, the incident that led to the slow zone with the debris on the track? Because we were told there was debris on the track.
I would guess from the speed that the GT cars were doing and the closing speed that they were entering a slow zone area. Okay. But I don't know that for a fact. But I would have thought the closing speeds were far too great for a GT car. Three or four GT cars wouldn't slow down, and they were fanning out. They were all having problems to get the thing stopped. And it was literally four abreast. He had nowhere to go but to take to the grass on the inside.
The 8, by the way, has made its way back to the pit lane and is now in the garage being seen to by Audi. We will hand down to Bruce Jones very quickly in a moment to give you an update. But here's how the GT traffic lies as we stand. The 97 Aston leads the way, Stefan Mucha, from the 71 AF Corsa Ferrari of Davide Rigon, and then the 64 car, which is the Chevrolet Corvette from the works outfit, Tommy Milner at the wheel. He is in front of Porsche, So Aston, Ferrari, Chevrolet and Porsche all locking out the top four positions there, doing well with a mix of manufacturers. Michael Christensen at the wheel of the 91. GTE AM headed by 53, as we've said, the Viper for Jeroen Blekemolen from Victor Scheidt, the 72 Ferrari from SMP Racing. Christian Reed, number 88, in a Porsche, is in third position ahead of Paul Dalalana in the 98 Aston.
That was the 51 Ferrari, Johnny, 51. With Fisichella in that we saw there losing that right rear. And as you say, it looked almost like a wheel, but Paul's probably right. It was the carcass of the tyre coming off completely. But either way, he obviously got embroiled, and he's in the pits at the moment, but got embroiled in that fracas with the number 8 Audi. And I hope that for his sake, it's just the wheel damage. But I suspect there'll be some body contact as well.
So here's Bruce Jones with an update on the number 8.
Well, most of the number 8, as I said, Johnny, when it came into the pit lane, the nose was missing. And most cameramen, etc., were looking at that. The tail end of the car was also damaged. They refueled the car while they were getting a new nose sorted, pushed it back into the garage on the dolly jacks. New nose has just been fitted. I can't see the tail of the car, but the body, the motion from everyone in the pit lane is that's about to come back out. And in fact, the engine coverage has been taken back off again just for a second, will be lowered down. So not as much of the car came back as went out from the pit lane. Duval staying on board. It should be back shortly. I'll give you a shout when it is, but it wasn't just frontal damage. Clearly got clouted up the tail as well.
Bruce Jones reporting live from our Nismo pit lane team, and thank you to Prescott Motorsport, who's tweeted at RSL_studio to tell us there was actually an Aston with no lights on in the middle of the track before the Audi arrived at the kink just before Indianapolis, almost as if, well, whether it was stopped in the middle of the track or just super slow. And the problem is, it's like a motorway accident, isn't it? The guy behind you doesn't quite have as much warning. The guy behind you hasn't got a clue what's going on. And all of a sudden, everyone piles into each other. And yes, these slow zones are great. But I mean, we had earlier on in the week.
See, I don't think they are great.
On mobile1radiolemon.com earlier on in the week, we had Martin Haven come in here and do actually a slow zone rant to illustrate the negatives of
the slow
zone.
See, as a driver, having had myself two or three near misses, especially going into somewhere like the Porsche curves when there's a slow zone. I had it last year. I literally overtook two cars because I had to, but got away with it. And then I had a Mika Salo in an NMP2 car nearly nail me up the derriere as well. So I am not a fan of it. I think you can have it under waved yellows. You can find all sorts of ways. But to have a slow zone, as we've got, I believe, a safety car out, to have a slow zone where you're going to create problems like they are here, I think is actually not the right way of doing it. And even in other championships and other races with the Kreventic that have the 60 zone, we've actually had situations where people overslowing in one of those, the minute they see it, has caused us, like you say, exactly like a tailback. And with the closing speeds, if you had all the same class of cars all doing similar sort of speeds, it wouldn't be such a big problem. But some of these closing speeds, when these cars are racing flat out, are colossal, let alone if a few people decide to, as we see a replay here, everyone's slowing down and he's just arrived there completely unsighted, and actually
side-to-side contact.
It looked to me
the
like there was
Porsche.
Even a green flag back there on the left-hand side before that yellow started waving. It looked to me like I saw a green flag on the left-hand side there, so maybe they were coming out of a zone.
That may, there's still yellow flags.
No,
there,
those started waving as soon as this starts happening.
Right.
I'd love to see a replay of that again in slow motion.
I also saw side-to-side contact in the pack, though, between the 18 Porsche, the black one, and the Hanergy Aston Martin. Of course, the GT guys are easing off way before they need to stop. They don't have the braking capacity of one of these P1 cars, so they're almost braking.
Lurked about out of the car there. I don't know if that's obviously not a good sign.
Yeah, yes.
He's distraught, absolutely distraught. I feel for him, I really do. And like I said, it's difficult for me to judge, and I'm not going to throw a fellow driver under the bus at all, but I have to say, in his defence, I don't think it makes it look like he was just being completely foolish and coming in at a crazy breakneck speed there, but it really isn't that simple because these cars stop so quickly, and the cars in front, I think it really caught him out.
And, of course, with so many cars in front of you, you're not necessarily going to see the yellow flags.
Well, they were all fanning out to avoid hitting each other, weren't you? Exactly. Had an LMP2 on the brakes getting all crossed up, another LMP2 on his left-hand side, two Astons or two GT cars at least in front. And so it literally was an almost impossible situation for him.
I think the key you hit on there, Johnny, though, was the green flag coming out of the second fast right-hander before Indianapolis, because
yes,
there was obviously an incident before that which led to a green flag therefore being shown at that marshal's point, and then drivers are concentrating more on, okay, I'm free of the green, now I'm just going to overtake everything in sight. And if there was then a further yellow zone ahead of them, that's what caught everybody out.
Absolutely. I think you might have hit the nail on the head there, Paul. And obviously, what we were speaking about earlier, these LMP1 cars, they accelerate so quickly now. So to get up to speed compared to a GT car, before they know it, they're up to racing speed, whereas a GT car take a lot longer to actually arrive at that point. But either way, a disastrous result for the number 8 Audi and for Audi in general, because that was a very strong car and it would have been up there figuring. And I believe it's back out on, is it back out on track yet, or is it still out? The grass is listed in it, but it looks like it's still in the pits, the number 8 Audi.
It is out.
Oh, it is out now, is it? Excellent.
Back into the race with Brazilian Lucas de Grassi on
board. I'm surprised they took him out.
Maybe just...
Because he started the car. He has to have 4 hours.
Well, that just about wraps up this portion of the race. We'll be back very shortly. My thanks to Johnny Molan, Paul Truswell, and it will continue to be down in the pit lane, Bruce Jones and Joe Bradley. Join us again very shortly on Mobile1RadioLeMans.com.
Around the world.
Around the clock.
Endurance racing direct to you.
RadioLeMans.com.
Get closer to motorsport with Mobile One.
Mobile One.
Well, the first 3 hours of the 2015 Le Mans 24 hours have been completed. And we've seen a couple of different cars at the head of the field. The race lead has been shared by Audi and Porsche. The 17 and the 18 Porsches at the moment at the... head of the field with the number 9 in the pit lane, just about to come back out again, this time under the tutelage of Felipe Albuquerque. The big news early on, the problems to the fastest of the Audis, the favourite, the number 7 car, which was driving away from the rest of the field until it got a puncture. But that car is sitting down in 5th position, still on the lead lap. In LMP2, Nico Lapierre, the 47 Orica, leads Ludo Bardi by almost 3 minutes. They're in different safety car trains at the moment for this accident that we saw earlier on. Nelson Panciatici in third position in the 36 Alpine. In GT, it's the number 64 Chevy Corvette, the Corvette. Remember, Jan Magnussen's car didn't make the start of the race after a big shunt on Thursday evening. Stefan Mucha and Davide Rigon in the pit lane in the 97 and 71 Aston and Ferraris respectively. In the AM category, it's a Porsche, that of Christian Reed in the 88 car, that leads it from Paul Dallalana, the Paul City 98 car, in second, and Francois Perrodo in the 83 in third position. Hello there, I'm John Hindhoff, and we've managed to get through to my stint before we got another safety car period. Just listening to Johnny Morlam, who is on my left, and Paul Truswell, who's on my right. Which, by the way, if you're listening in stereo, is exactly how it works as well. The thing is about slow zone, Johnny, is if you racing drivers would respect yellow flags, we wouldn't need them in the first place.
I knew you were going to start. Yeah, you could say that, absolutely. I mean, it's one way of creating it. I just don't think at the end of the day... I think if you're in a situation, John, where you have a zone where it's a slow zone, so you're using it as a zone that's going to come through to create an entry point on the track, like a pit lane, mm-hmm. where you have to be doing, say, 60, 70, 80K or whatever it is, you're always going to have problems in that zone leading into that. I think you should wave yellows and it should neutralise immediately. At that point, you should slow down. But then again, you'll have people that slow down too quickly at that point.
Slow is so slow.
Exactly. So it is a tricky one.
Like all the things that happen, and you and I have had many a long chat about this in the American Le Mans series down through the years, where... the rule book for safety cars, the rule book for safety cars got extended from "we'll stick a safety car out" to about 3 pages to try and mitigate the different classes. The problem is, the more you try to stop the problem, the more you potentially cause others a lot of unintended consequences. Quick bit of housekeeping here as the barrier repair goes on. If you've just tuned in, www.radio. If you've just tuned in to www.radiolemon.com, we've just done a changeover, and you'll need to just click the player again for the Studio Vision powered by Duke. It is on the front page, so you can go into it. You'll be able to see it right there. Head down to Audi and to Loic Duval, who's with Bruce Jones.
Thank you very much, John. Could you explain what happened before Indianapolis to the number 8 Audi?
Basically, during my lap, I heard that we had a slow zone in Indianapolis. Going out of Mulsanne, my engineer told me that the car was clear. The truck. And when I end up to E, we could see that the yellow flag, the yellow mark flashing, but all the marshals with the green flags waving, and we all know that when we do the briefing with the race control, that the marshal overrule everything. So having green flag, I just stayed flat out. But unfortunately, at one point, three or four GT cars just completely slowed down, stayed side by side, and I had nowhere to go.
Very bad luck. So the car's fixed and De Grassi's on board.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's completely fixed. I was not on the radio so far, but for me, the car was running well. Actually, we lost only one lap, if I can say so. But it's a shame to have this kind of issue.
Very bad luck. Good stint. Thank you.
Nismo. Nismo. Eat. Sleep. Race. Repeat. Mobile One, Radio Le Mans, the sound of Lasat for the 24 hours.
On 91.2 FM, on Sirius Channel 93, on XM 201, and around the world at RadioLeMans.com, this is Mobile One for 2015. This is Mobile One, Radio Le Mans, with our... Paul, is this our second full car or safety car period, should I say, that we've had? There was one a little bit earlier on.
Yes, second safety car, and triggered by the third slow zone period. So, yes, the last safety car that we had was for 22 minutes. And hopefully this one won't be as long, but I have a feeling that it might be because of that barrier repair. Barrier repair is never quick. Under the safety car, obviously the number 8 car came in and pitted and was delayed in any case, but also the number 9 Audi was also into the pits and was delayed as a result of having made his pit stop. He then had to, of course, wait for the lights to turn green at the pit lane exit before being allowed out. So whereas we had two Audis in the top five, we've now got only the one car, the number 9 car, and I think that is actually going to come out of the top for four. I think by the time this safety car unwinds itself, we'll be into a Porsche 123, John. We'll have to see how it pans out when they come through at the end of this lap behind the safety car.
I'll make a prediction now that before I leave, there'll be an Audi back on the top of the timing screens in the next 3 hours. The good news on weather is that the weather front that was blowing up in the Bay of Biscay earlier on and made landfall, what, 2 or 3 hours ago, looks to be bothering the good people of Tours down to the south and east of us. But the major part of that weather system is blowing through down to the south of Le Mans, so looking clean and dry for a wee while yet. With the P2 battle just split up for a moment behind the safety car trains, the GTs falling, and what a story this would be, by the way, to the 64 car at the moment. And I have to apologise that when I did the start of the show, that the rundown I did was in fact incorrect, because the top of the arm field is the SRT Viper, and they are right up with the leaders of the class in the pro category. So it's the two big front engine American cars, Johnny, yeah, that are leading out at the moment, and Blake Morland and Ben Keating and Mark Miller, two rookies in that car, doing a cracking job at the moment.
And I don't think it's any coincidence, you were mentioning the American Le Mans series earlier, I don't think it's any coincidence that the two cars at the first of Pro and first in Pro-Am are actually the cars run by American teams who understand safety cars, strategies, yellows, when to pit, when not to pit, better than anyone. And that Viper, as Paul, where we were talking about earlier, had about 7 or 8 laps to go, and they decided obviously to stay out under this safety car this time, as the last time they extended it, they did the same, and that's put them right up there, second GT and leading their Pro-Am class.
Well, they're going to be the first GT car if they don't come in at the end of this one. Only Jerome Blakemolen has driven that car thus far in the race. Fernando Reis the 99 car in second place. He's going to inherit the lead when he comes back around, but he's in the same safety car train as the leading AM car, which could become the leading GT car, as I've just mentioned, as they come back around. And the other car that I missed out, my apologies, is the 72, the Ferrari. Victor Chetar is at the wheel of that one, and again they will come round and improve their positions next time around. In the P2 category, I did get the 47 right, at least in the lead of that one. But Nelson Panciatici has come into the pit lane in the number 36 Alpine, taking the advantage there. Slip back down to Bruce Jones, who is in Aston Martin World and has Nicky Team.
Nicky, this is the troubled part of the Aston Martin World. 96 is being rebuilt in the Dane train. What's the...
I had my last stint. I drove without power steering, so my arms are quite heavy right now. We found a small hole on the way to the driving power steering. So probably a stone or something hit it, and it's just leaking a small fluid. And yeah, just so disappointed so early in the race that something that happened like this.
Bad luck after such a good start. I hope it gets fixed. Down to Joe.
The 64 Corvette has been in, fuel and tyres. Now, the driver at the wheel of that car was Tommy Milner, and the fact that I can't find him in the garage means that he's still in the car. Yes, that's a clue. So, just fuel and tyres then, and that seems odd to just change fuel and tyres and not change the driver at the same time, because you might as well change the driver in the time it's taking you to do the tyres. Let's have a dive in, see if my... elastic stretches, and maybe Doug can shed some light. Doug, sorry to interrupt. Did Tommy stay in the car, or have you changed drivers there?
Did he what?
Did Tommy Milner stay in the car, or have you changed?
Oh no, he stayed in the car.
He has. That I'm surprised, because usually you guys change tyres and driver, or change driver while you change the tyres.
Well, the way the safety car was set up, and that we had to stop for fuel. And so there was no penalty for putting on tires, so we put them on.
Great stuff, of course.
Free.
That's why you're in charge, isn't it?
Sometimes.
Thanks, Doug.
Doug Feehan and Joe Bradley. Before that, Bruce Jones. They're in the pits for as part of our Nismo Pit Lane team. Thanks to Shea and to Nick. We'll have Owen Mildenhall in there a bit later on as well. Temperatures are still pretty warm out there. 98 degrees Fahrenheit, 32 degrees Celsius on the track, and 24, so that's 50, that's 80 degrees Fahrenheit, 24 degrees in the air as the barrier repair continues. It's not going to be comfortable in these, predominantly now Johnny Morlam, who's on my left, or closed top cars going around at slow speed behind the safety cars. Nice to be able to get in and sort of get yourself settled down there, but it's actually going to be pretty warm and sticky and horrid.
It all these in now, all the LMP cars are coupes, or virtually all of them, all the GT cars, they have the same problem in an LMP as you do in GT in terms of cockpit temperatures are incredibly high. And when you're going slowly also, I mean, it's actually quite uncomfortable in a racing car when you're driving slowly, and I don't know quite why that is. I think it's almost everything seems a bit heavier, your legs, you start noticing things, and obviously you haven't got the adrenaline when you're driving quickly, you start noticing little aches and pains, especially as you're getting a bit older, and it actually can be a very, very unpleasant environment.
Says the Peter Pan of motor racing.
I was just saying, I was watching the barrier there, which looked quite badly damaged, so it just shows you how hard that number 8 Audi hit it, and the Audi that hit it is back out there, and they're still fixing the barrier, as somebody's tweeted.
Yeah, somebody's just said that. And well done to Thomas Smith, who's tweeted in it at RSL_studio. Someone from Audi should be tasked with coming up with a quick repair barrier. The car was fixed so much faster. Hearing there as well about driving a car without power steering. Now, yes. The only time I've ever done that was an MX-5 at Anglesey, which is quite twisty. But 55 minutes after driving even an MX-5, it's not that the car's heavy, it's because the rack's made to be power assisted.
Excellent.
And when it isn't, it's like trying to turn a stiff bolt with a short spanner.
Absolutely, John, and also with the really fat tires, they're incredibly heavy. I had that actually happen to me in the Saline at Laguna Seca, and the only way you could actually get it to hold it, because obviously when you're hitting the bumps and curbs, it wants to wrench itself straight, so you were literally having to jam your knee into the steering wheel and hold it. And of course, then a lot of finesse goes away from what you're doing. You're not really sensing the grip level you've got, and you overwork the fronts, and the next thing you know, you're absolutely ruining your front tyres, especially. So it's incredibly physical and also almost impossible to drive quickly at that. So Nicky Thiem, I don't know how long he was driving with that power steering problem, but it must have been heroic. Having said that, the places it would have hurt him as most would have been through the Porsche curves. Obviously got some straights here to relax upon, which is slightly helpful, but certainly going through the Porsche curves, he would have really been hanging on to that for dear life.
And you say relax, and that's exactly what you want to do, because at that point, you're actually gripping the steering wheel harder than you really want to or should have to. That pumps up your arms, it pumps up your shoulder, you tend to lean forward in your belts because you're trying to get some purchase, and you're using and expending just so much more energy. And Bruce Jones has just said, I'll feed you up, and I'll let you describe just exactly how he looked, Bruce, when he got out of the car.
Well, it could be described in many ways, but should we say wrung out?
Very good.
He's normally sort of bouncing around, and I accept people look a little tired after a stint, but I sort of shook his hand and the arm was limp. He was fairly finished, but anyhow, back out. And a sort of apologies for getting all excited with Duval, but he really didn't want to be at the front of the garage any longer, because obviously that was a scary moment, and B, possibly, well, maybe a race-changing moment for the Audi number 8. But anyhow, he will perk up, he's that sort of guy, but that was a big old moment.
Yeah, I felt very sorry for him. We saw the pictures of people trying to console him, and obviously, clearly, even though he feels that perhaps it's not, you know, 100% his fault, which I don't think it is, still, when you're the captain in charge of the car, when there's a problem, even if it's a complete mechanical problem, you still feel partially responsible for that. And it's such a team effort here at Le Mans, the 24-hour race, just to get to the finish. So many people working hard and trying to make that happen, that when you're a driver in that situation, you feel like you're in the car when something goes wrong. You almost feel like you were to blame and you've let people down.
I was going to say, is it almost worse because you're part of a team? If
Absolutely.
It's you and your race and it's just you,
yeah,
then all right, you're going to beat yourself up, you're going to be disappointed, but you've got two other guys waiting to have their go.
Absolutely, and it doesn't matter what team you're in, you're going to feel like that. But in someone like his, in Loic de Waal's case, he's got he knows how important this race is to Audi. He knows how much effort's gone in. He's done all the testing. He's done the 24-hour, 36-hour tests and all the rest of it. So he knows exactly how much effort has gone in and how important it is for the racing program to do well. So that's going to make it even worse for him. So I did feel for him. But like Bruce rightly says, he's a racing driver, and that we all have the ability to bounce back very, very quickly. Eternal optimists.
Brendan Hartley leads the motor race.
Oh, I'm so pleased for him.
20 past on near enough. 20 minutes past six here in Central Europe. He's worked really hard for this, and his career has brought him through a variety of different ways, as many people do, but we've seen far more of these young drivers now, coming into it much younger for one thing, mm-hmm. but also making the jump from single seaters either directly to LMP1 or through P2 and into LMP1. And this is really interesting, because that's different from what it used to be like not so very many years ago.
That's very true, John. I mean, when I started, my whole dream was Formula One, and that's all I looked at. And I think now younger drivers are realizing younger that Formula One is financially virtually impossible for all but a very few, and that's why they're making the decision now. Their aspiration now is just to be a professional racing driver and get paid for the living. And I'm so pleased for Brendan, though, John. Such an understated guy, lovely guy.
Agree.
Quietly gone about this and always been one of the quickest Porsche drivers. You know that? Always been one of the quickest of all of their crew. Quietly going about his business, and now he's leading the 24-hour race.
Well, that's the Porsche of all three Porsches, that would be my favourite Porsche for two reasons. One, because I think it's got the best driving talent. I think Timo Bernard is turning into a very, very good team leader, and he's helped those two guys
hugely,
massively. I think Mark Webber has all of a sudden, back end of last season, towards the end of the flyaway races, something clicked in Mark's mind and he began to get it. In fairness, the team were getting to grips with the car at that time as well.
Absolutely.
And it just so happens these happy accidents. And in fact, Timo talking to Mark and discussing things at the moment down in the pit lane. Obviously, it's red and white, so it's going to get my attention, as well as somebody from Sunderland. The interesting thing, though, is, you know, Brendan and the other guys who've come up, Harry Tinknell, the same, one or two others, Mitch Evans, who are coming up through the LMP2 category. we've got a really interesting ladder system almost now with LMP3 about to come online, but all of a sudden we're going to mess around with LMP2, and I'm not sure that now is the right time to do that. I understand why the decision was made in 2014, when LMP2 grids were looking pretty rough, but I'm not sure that now's the right time to be starting to cut down the number of cars in LMP2.
I couldn't agree with you more, John. I think you've got a pro-am landscape pretty much through most of sports cars, which is good for the pros coming through that are using it as a stepping stone to get into factory drives in LMP1. And if you limit that and push it even more towards the money side of things in terms of the amateurs being in control of which drivers they're driving with, I think you're in a situation where you're not going to allow that talent to come through. And we're having a sort of generational changing of the guard at the moment. You know, Tom Christensen's retired, Dinda Capella retired a few years ago, Alan McNish retired a couple of years ago. There's a lot of change going on, and it happened even back in the day a few years ago when it happened when I was coming through and the younger drivers. And you're seeing now over the next 5 to 6, 7 years that you'll see it happening in GTs as well, I believe. You know, the Oliver Gavins and people like that will hang up the helmet, and the younger Stanaways and people like that are coming through. And so it's a definite changing of the guard happening, and then we'll continue over the next 5 years or so.
And dare I suggest as well the filthy lucre involved in this, because some of these young lads clearly have got either funds, whether it's family funds or access to sponsorship funds, because they're doing GP2 and GP3, which is not threepence halfpenny to do a season. And to have them think about bringing the money into sports car racing surely can't be a bad thing either.
It's not a bad thing in sense of the sports cars, but it is a bad thing for that jobbing professional racing driver who is trying to come in with no money and actually expecting to get paid to ply his trade. And so certainly I feel for, I was talking to Matt Griffin about it, who's my teammate earlier, last year rather, and just saying to him, if I had the next 10 years ahead of me to try and earn my living as a jobbing professional racing driver, I wouldn't fancy my chances. I think it's really changed, and the aspiration now is almost to find a good gentleman driver who's loyal to you and drive with that gentleman driver. Mm. It has become like a pro-am, like we were just mentioning, platform, and that's the business model. So things have changed. Obviously you're going to have the drivers like Estra, who's at the moment is the hot ticket as well, and people like that coming through. Harry Tinknell getting the Nissan LMP1 drive, Olivier Pla another one. So you're going to always have that happening. There's always going to be that ladder, but I think you'll be very careful how you allow talent to out. And I think at the moment it's proving, even I think money's always been important in motorsport, but I think right now it's become even more critical.
Just a quick reminder, if you're just joining us, www.radiolemon.com, and our studio vision, Johnny Morlam is the good looking one closest to the camera, and if I stand in front of him I can completely block him out so it looks like it doesn't exist, and then all the good stuff when he says it, if I just move my mouth it almost looks like.
Where do I put my hand if you're a ventriloquist dummy then?
Oh, can you warm that one up first, please? Johnny Mullum and Paul Truswell is at the far end in the portable walking data centre. Just the 7 screens for Paul this week, and he's struggling along with them. And if you have just joined us, then you'll be fine. But if you were watching earlier on and the screen froze, all you've got to do is click on the other player, because we've moved on to part 2 of our video studio vision powered by Duke Video. Keep your eye out for the 4 hours of highlights that those guys turn out on DVD and Blu-ray. They'll be using our commentary again for that in 2015, and there's a great compendium as well of the last few years of Le Mans, which is, I'm not sure how long it would take if you sat down and watched them all back to back. It sounds like a long weekend with a few of your mates.
They're not all 4 hours, though.
No, I know, yeah. I know. 4 hours was a relatively new thing. Yeah. Paul, nothing's changed behind the safety car, except some things we need to point out, because when the full course caution came out, the 3 safety cars come out around the 8.5 miles, inevitably it breaks up the battles that was happening before. What's yes. gone on, and where are people?
Well, it's helped Brendan Hartley's cause, if anything, because there's a safety car gap now between Brendan Hartley and the second place Porsche, the number 18 car, and furthermore the number 19 car, which Nick Tandy is behind the wheel of. We've got Porsche's first, second and third, just to reiterate that. The number 19 car, which Nick Tandy is behind the wheel of, is running out of fuel, even though it has better fuel consumption than a lot of the other cars out there, even though it's been behind the safety car, and as a result of that it is now in the pits to refuel. So the number 19 car with bit of a wiggle on actually as he came into the pit lane, obviously trying to maximise his pit entry speed.
And sure, his teammate will be delighted for that if they've got to leave those tyres on. Remember, you've only got 12 sets of tyres for the 24 hours.
Yes, but this is the first set of tyres for the... No, it's not, is it? Because Nick Tandy should have got a new set of tyres.
Joe Bradley's down there.
Yes,
Joe, what are you seeing?
Yeah, what I'm seeing is fuel. Oh, I thought they were going to go for tyres, but they are. They've gone for everything. They've changed the driver. They've changed the tyres now. That's what you can hear in the background. So a full service there for the 19, taking advantage, of course, of the safety car period and not losing as much track time. Now, that's what a race car should sound like when it pulls away.
Yeah, I like that. Like that a lot. For the third time this week, a Porsche is throwing flame out the back, and for the third time it's a GT Porsche. This time it's the 88, and Christian Reid has got out. He's fine. He's pulled up next to a Marshall's post and he's out of the car fine. But that, Johnny, is very unusual. To have one Porsche GT engine go over the weekend is one thing, and we saw poor Alex Kapadia on Thursday. That car managed to get out. They took the penalty for changing the engine. This is the third one we've seen now.
Yeah, normally, I mean, Porsche is bulletproof in pretty much every aspect, and the engine in particular normally just run like clockwork. So extremely unusual in the space of what, 2 hours, less than 2 hours, to see two almost have an identical problem. Fortunately for Christian Reid, because obviously this is his personally run team, that car didn't go up in flames the same way as the factory Porsche did earlier.
Looked very similar though, Johnny.
It looks similar.
It's either overheated or it's thrown some oil out the back. He's coming down towards
the
second chicane.
You can see the oil there coming out the back there, and then it ignites on the exhaust. Yeah. That'd be nice for that Aston Martin following behind.
Very nasty indeed, and that's going to cause a bit of an extension to this safety car period. If they were thinking any way of going green, they're going to have to get the oil dry down on there. An incident packed a few moments even behind the safety car. Le Mans and the 24 hours throwing up problems for a number of people. At least at the moment the weather is playing ball. It's still very pleasant out there at the moment.
You're right, John. Look at that laying down again. Oh, and that, unlike in the first chicane, that is going to be bang on the racing line. So, well, you know what they say
that
in America, yellows breed yellows.
Oh, so, yeah. And we, by the way, should say absolutely no criticism of Christian there, because that happens very, very quickly indeed. He would have had no warning of that. And remember, these are water and oil-cooled cars now, not like the old 993s. From 996 onwards, they've had water in the engines as well. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, the safety car was due in at the end of that lap.
Oh.
So they were going to bring it in, so the team managers were getting ready. But unfortunately, from their point of view, now the safety car has stayed out. And of course, only just now has that number 19 Porsche been able to get on his way again.
But he will be able to catch up the...
He'll be able to catch up the tail, but he's already lost...
Because he got held in pit lane.
Because he got held in pit lane. So the pit stop total time for that stop was over 3 minutes, 3 1/4 minutes. So we heard Joe saying they were doing a full service, and they might as well do, because all they were going to do if they didn't was to waste the time at the end of the pit lane. So they might as well have wasted it doing something useful, which included putting Earl Bamber in, and means that Nick Tandy only got one stint at the wheel of that car. It was driven by Nico Hülkenberg for a triple. Then Nick Tandy got in and only was allowed to do one stint, because it's now gone to Earl Bamber.
Earl Bamber, another one of the nice guys of the sport, and we are very lucky, and I'm sure Johnny will agree with me, this is a very competitive pit lane, all motorsport is, but we are very lucky to have more than our fair share of good guys who you would actually go for a beer with or go and sit down and have and break bread with in here. That's nothing to say that they wouldn't quite happily put you into a gravel trap if they were racing you on the last lap of a race, but we are very, very fortunate in this area of the sport.
I think I couldn't agree more. I think sports cars has still got that element to it, which I love, where even teams will help fellow teams. Their competitors, they'll help them with parts if they need them, they'll help them with all sorts of things, and the drivers out on the track, they'll fight as hard as they can, and no quarter given, as we see. I think it was Alex Buncombe there playing around with his seat insert.
Had problems all week in the Nissan.
I've heard the seat position is quite difficult in the Nissan, especially in terms of getting the brake pedal pressure that they need as well.
Well, so, believe this or believe it not, I can get into it. relatively easily, and Bruce got into it as well. And Bruce is 6'13".
So someone like Alex is going to be swimming in it then, isn't he? No disrespect, John, but he's slightly skinnier than you.
Indeed, yes, absolutely. I would get myself in. It's always getting out. That's the problem with me in race cars. It's another one of those sitting in the bathtub with your feet by the taps kind of driving position where your feet
single
are actually...
Single seater, almost a Formula One kind
of... Absolutely right. Not quite leaned far, as far back, actually. It's a little more upright than some
of the
cars.
Well, that's the problem. If you're in a seat, and I've had this in some LMP1 cars as well, if you're sitting relatively upright but your feet are up high, that actually puts a lot of strain on your lower back. If you can recline yourself slightly like you would in a single seater, that takes some of that pressure away. So it's quite critical as we see the Christian Reed's number 88, which I think at the time was running fourth or fifth in class, so it's a real shame for them, clearly out of the race. But going back to the seating position, yeah, quite critical that, and it's something that probably designers don't really think about until the last minute when they stick the spacer in and decide what they're going to do with the driver's seating position.
Yeah, the carbon-based life form is just another plug-and-play item nowadays to designer.
Exactly, just the spacer, the person that fills the space between the seat and the steering wheel, that's all drivers are, apparently.
So we're at half past another hour. That's time for an hourly update. You're listening to 91.2 Mobile One, Radio Le Mans, and around the world at RadioLeMans.com. You'll find us on Sirius 93 and XM 201 if you need to step away from your computer.